and 60 seconds away from a press conference. Guys don't have any faith in us that we'll start these things on time. Do it from there. Mike, there it is, right there. Look over your shoulder. See, that would be the... No, that doesn't really help you. Five, four, three, two, one. The 3:15 press conference will now begin, according to my watch. And with us today, in addition to Cliff Charlesworth, or Phil Schaffer, S-H-A-F-F-E-R, world's famous flight dynamics officer, the biggest, certainly, in the world, and Mike Collins, of course. Cliff?
Good afternoon. I'm sure all of you saw the TV today, which certainly was a great show. We're still trying to figure out, among some of us at least, where the North Pole was. However, to recap the shift, we came on this morning, this team, at about 48 hours elapsed. Things had been fairly quiet on the previous shift, and this shift turned out the same way, the highlight, of course, being the TV time that was scheduled today. In terms of the spacecraft, it's performing beautifully. All systems are go. Everything looks very good on the spacecraft in all areas. Our consumables and so forth, we're in good shape all the way around. The network performance has been very good. We're continuing to experience excellent results with our tracking situation. I think you're all aware that the communications has been very good. On this shift, we spent some time doing some additional nav sightings with using lunar horizon to star. This information is getting much better. That is the determination of a state vector on board the spacecraft and its guidance system. Once they take the sightings, we're getting very good agreement between his trajectory that he's computing aboard the spacecraft and the one we're computing on the ground, and Phil can probably add some words about that if there are questions. Everything else seems to be performing well. We're hopeful that we'll be in good shape to perform the lunar orbit insertion maneuver early in the morning. Most of us want to get away and get some rest, because I think everybody wants to be up no matter what shift they're on for that activity. The crew sound quite good to me. I think you heard their report that they're all feeling fairly well. There doesn't seem to be any additional problem in that area. And in summary, I guess everything's been fairly quiet on this shift, and that's the way we'd like to see it. The next shift will be continuing to do a few more nav sightings. We'll continue in PTC. We'll sort out the options on the final mid-course maneuver. Right now we're looking at something like 3 feet per second required at the LOI minus 8 hour point. We'll exercise that and determine whether we want to make that maneuver or not. Then the following shift is where the real activity will begin in terms of making the final analysis of the spacecraft systems and to determine whether we are going to commit to LOI. And from our point of view right now, it all looks very good. And I think that's about it summarizes the shift and the work to date.
Maybe Phil would like to mention a few things. For instance, I think the paracynthian figured here and the one there were a couple of feet from each other or something.
No. They were about 2 miles.
2 miles.
Different, yeah. With the spacecraft determined number being about 2 miles lower than the one we were predicting. And we believe that our prediction at this time is no worse than 2 miles, and it could very well be much better than that. Say again? That's a function of the analysis concerning the mid-course coming up.
I think the question he's asking is, what altitude are you getting now? About 69 miles, isn't it?
It's affirmative, about 69 miles. 69, yes.
Oh, wait a minute now. Okay, let's go right here.
I take it then the astronauts are showing 67 nautical miles on their
state
vector. If no mid-course were made, what would happen, to this paracynthian? Is the mid-course designed to maintain the paracynthian at 69?
No, the mid-course would pull the paracynthian down to its nominal value of about 61 and a half miles.
Waller?
Could you tell us a little bit what it's like aboard the spacecraft? I know that we're here and they're there, but in the atmosphere that they now have, which I gather is about pure oxygen, does a cooking dinner smell the way it smells to us, and do their voices sound the same to each other?
Well, I think we have a gentleman that has been through that could probably better answer that.
Well, I don't think there's really much difference between 5 psi, 100% oxygen, and 15, which is what we have here with 20%. Your lungs don't much care. They see about the same amount of oxygen that they would on the ground, and you don't notice any difference, and the decreased pressure is not apparent in any way. The oxygen over a long period of time has tended to sort of dry people out, and they become nasally a little bit on the stuffy side. But as far as transmitting cooking odors and that stuff goes, it would be, of course, about the same as here on the ground, although the way we cook is just mixing water inside closed bags, and none of those odors are transmitted, nor would they be here.
You don't want to libel John Young in any way.
Sir?
You don't want to libel John Young in any way, do you, Mike? Tom, go ahead.
Does it look like there'll have to be a fourth mid-course now? And if so, how will you do it with RCS? And how much of a burn, and what will this do to the final trajectory of the spacecraft?
Okay, let me take a crack at it, and if I get hung up, get the expert on it. Right now, with the orbit determination we're looking at, the final mid-course, if we do it, looks like 3 feet per second. Now, that would be done with the command the service module, RCS engine system, as opposed to the big engine. There's a question that we will discuss as to whether to do it or not, because right now we're at 69 or 70 nautical mile paracentium. Of course, the purpose of this mid-course would be to bring us down to 61 or something in that area. So this will be settled within the next 2 or 3 hours, I would expect, and a decision will be made as to whether to do it or not. And, of course, we want to look at as much tracking data prior to doing that as possible. Well, that's what I say. We're discussing that now as to whether to do it or not.
Could one of you gentlemen, in plain layman's language, explain the why of the fact that by switching the reference point from Earth to Moon, there's a jump of some 720 odd feet per second in the velocity?
First of all, I think that was been planted by my friend on the right down here. The Moon is in an orbit about the Earth going about 3,400 feet per second. While we stay in Earth reference and measure our velocity relative to the Earth, we get a number in a coordinate system relative to the Earth. When we switch to the lunar system, then there is a vector addition of vector addition. It means they're not arithmetic. Two and two are not four. Okay, but anyway, a part of that 3,400 feet per second.
Two and two is not four there?
Not in vector addition. But anyway, a part of the 3,400 feet per second that the moon is traveling now goes into the spacecraft velocity. Now, no.
Go ahead, Phil, you're doing fine.
The Earth is traveling at a different speed as the moon is?
No, it's the moon is traveling around the Earth, okay? And we were essentially going straight away from the Earth, okay? And now we're going, and we're at the same time going almost straight into the moon. But the moon is going this way, okay? And there's a small addition to the velocity vector now relative to the moon, because it's the coordinate system that we measure velocity in is moving relative to the Earth. The velocities could not be the same unless the Earth and moon were sitting still relative to each other.
You want to explain it, Walter? Go ahead.
Reference point, of course.
Yeah.
My question was on the fogging problem. They reported yesterday windows 3 and 5, 3 virtually closed off and 5 poor. I wondered if this was the same today. And also, will it affect the orbit mission around the moon? Will it affect the photography and the television program?
The situation today is the same, I believe, as it was reported yesterday. The rendezvous windows, which are 2 and 4, Mike, are clear. 1 and 5 are slightly fogged, and 3 is, I believe the term was almost opaque. We are looking at the effect of this in terms of the work we're going to do in lunar orbit, and we might possibly need to change a couple of activities, or at least a couple of the attitudes, in order to do the things we want to do in lunar orbit. Do you have anything to add to that, Mike? I know you've been looking at this with Bud.
No, really, the only window that's in bad shape is the center hatch window, and very limited use is made of it in lunar orbit, so very minor corrections have to be made to the lunar timeline. Whenever we have somebody scheduled to look out that window and take a picture, it's simply a question of having him use some alternate window, which may require that we move the spacecraft around a little bit, and those details are now being looked into.
I have a couple of questions about the TV. First, today's television. What was the attitude of the spacecraft in relationship to the Earth, and were they maneuvering the spacecraft as well as maneuvering the camera under your direction, Mike?
Well, if you, let's see, I need about 3 hands and a lot of help here. The spacecraft, of course, was in passive thermal control attitude. If this microphone is the Earth and that one is the moon, the spacecraft is rotating at an attitude which keeps it broadside to the sun, essentially, for thermal reasons. Now, that attitude was stopped, so we had the spacecraft stopped in inertial space, broadside now to the Earth, okay? And we want to look out a window, which is the narrow end of the pencil, so it's looking up completely away from the Earth. So what we did was move the spacecraft about 60 degrees toward the Earth, and then get the additional 30 degrees that we needed to look at the Earth by the position of the bracket looking obliquely out through the spacecraft window. You see what I mean? This 90 degrees we got by 60 degrees of spacecraft motion plus 30 degrees of bracket motion. And the reason we did this was that we didn't want to make our inertial platform unhappy by exceeding a certain middle gimbal angle. In other words, I don't think you really want those details, but we like to keep our middle gimbal angle down to a certain value. So for that reason, we only yawed 60 degrees and then used the additional 30 with the bracket. So I was giving them instructions, of course, relative to what I was seeing on the TV screen without the foggiest notion of what kind of correction they would make. They could, in fact, make that correction by an additional spacecraft yaw. I think that that would be their second choice, because that would not only increase this middle gimbal angle, it would also cost propellant. So my guess is that they were making all these corrections that they could without running into their spacecraft structure just simply by moving the bracket, and that when additional corrections were required, they were changing the spacecraft attitude.
And the other question
that was
is
TV production, though, at some distance, huh?
It was well directed, I might add. We got a beautiful picture. The second question I have is pertinent to the television expectable tomorrow. As it stands now, are you staying pretty close to the flight plan insofar as times are concerned? Is there any possibility that you might try to give us an additional burst of television somewhere in the course of lunar orbit?
Well, I don't want to open that one up, but I would say right now that, as far as I know, we'll stick with the current flight plan, Roy.
We're consistently run 10 minutes ahead of it for 2 days now. Come to television.
Can never satisfy you.
I know. It's all, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden looking at the gray pattern, and here it comes. Borman's saying, are you seeing the picture? Ed?
A couple of questions. One, Mike, what window were they shooting out of for the TV today? And two, could one of you gentlemen talk a little bit about the situation with the secondary coolant loop?
They were shooting out of Frank Borman's left-hand rendezvous window. That would be window number 2. I might add also that at the distance they are, it takes nearly 2 seconds for their voice to get down here or for our voice to get up to them. So there was also some time delay problems in giving them instructions about which way to move the camera.
The second part of your question was the secondary evaporator? Oh, yeah. We ran a redundant component check. I believe this occurred on the shift before I came on. And they noticed one little funny thing after that point in terms of the secondary evaporator, in that the steam pressure didn't quite behave as expected. Subsequent to that, in checking back and de-logging the detailed data on a pretty fine time scale, we're fairly well satisfied that what happened was that in the procedure, as he went through this redundant component check, that I believe he might have turned a pump off just a little bit too quickly. And at this point, we're all fairly satisfied that there's no problem in the secondary loop at all. And we will get another check of this in the next few hours, certainly prior to committing to LOI. So we don't see any problem with it.
Jack?
Paul, I copied some figures that you gave on distances from the Earth and Moon at MSI, which, if I did my arithmetic right, added up to more than the distance from the Earth to the Moon. Could you give us those figures and explain if they are greater?
Bill's got them here. I think it was 176,000 nautical to Earth. And then the figure to the Moon was
33,800. We are not on a line connecting the Earth and the Moon. The Earth, Moon, and spacecraft are forming a triangle.
So that would be, what, 213, 210. That's nautical now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but you're taking an angle. You're haven't achieved its intersection, and it's a straight crow fly kind of thing, I think. Mr. Schaffer, would you care to elucidate?
Since you've set me up, would you say it again?
Well, would you answer that gentleman's question correctly?
The question again, please.
Question? Well, no, on this distance thing, are we happy with these numbers? They came out of your computer. Why don't you justify them?
I asked why they added up to greater than the distance from the Earth to the Moon. It seems to me you explained it. what okay. I thought. Thanks, Mr. Haney.
No trouble at all. Anytime you want to know something. Mike was picking on me earlier.
Just a quick question about where the paracentesium is now likely to occur back of the moon. What kind of coordinates do we get on that?
The moon is, the paracentesium is occurring about 6 degrees off of a line connecting the Earth and the moon. And it is occurring 6 degrees to the left of the Earth-Moon line as you face the moon. Affirmative.
And where does that put their high point on the visible face of the moon? Because when we're looking at the TV tomorrow morning, they're going to be headed up toward the top of their path, looking down at the surface, and they're going to be coming up pretty rapidly to an aposentesium on the visible face of the moon. And where is that going to be?
It would be 6 degrees to the right, I guess, of if you look directly at the moon. Right.
This is in the in the lunar orbit.
Right. He's talking about he's in lunar orbit now.
Yeah.
There we go. Phil,
why don't you for lunar coordinates,
give him that thing you gave me about.
Sorry about that. Business.
Play like that's the moon.
You certainly are a lot of help, huh?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Phil.
Is the aposentesium sort of over the terminator on the visible face of the moon tomorrow?
Oh, no. The aposentesium is past the terminator in the darkness.
In the darkness.
Yes. So if they were viewing the surface from the aposentesium of their orbit, they would have to be looking back behind where they've come from. The terminator would be at about 45 degrees east or to the right, and they will be well past that at aposentesium of their orbit.
Henry?
On the television pass, you undertook to explain the attitude of the spacecraft. I don't see how, if the spacecraft front windows were pointed toward the Earth so the camera could operate, how the directional antenna could get a beam on the Earth. And secondly, I would like somebody to explain to me, was the spacecraft in a heads-down position relative to the Sun-Earth-Moon plane? I mean, is that why we were seeing the Earth upside down?
Yeah. Well, of course, I'll take a crack at the antenna. You know, the antenna rotates, that is, it moves. You can move the position of the high-gain antenna in pitch and yaw. So you can move that around. You have 2 degrees of freedom there to maintain lock. Now, Mike, were they, in terms of the, you went through your two Mike Earth Moon here, were they heads, the sun out here, were they heads up or heads down? Or can
well,
we
they,
tell?
I don't know. On the antenna, they were very close to breaking lock, as a matter of fact. There's a 15-degree warning zone, and we were nuzzling right up against the edge of that. So they were close, but they you know, as long as the high gain doesn't look through its own structure, it's okay.
Well, how far can they swivel this thing? I mean, to make it turn around and look this way?
Well, they can... They can swivel it all the way around. The point is, if it looks at its own skin, of course, then it breaks lock. And there's a plot of two angles, and there's no simple answer as to where it can look. You have to plot one versus the other. And there's a, you know what I mean? One's called phi, one's called theta. They have to do one roughly as a yaw angle, and the other is a pitch angle, and there are various combinations of pitch and yaw which interplay to define a zone of no-nos and a good zone. And you have to look at that plot, but generally speaking, I'd say that they cover 3/4 of the available sphere or something like that. Now the heads up down bit, they were heads down because they did not have sunshine on their windows, but the sun angle, I suppose, is available somewhere from our data, but I certainly couldn't quote it to you right now.
Waller.
Apropos of earlier difficulties with a telescope, now that when they look away from the sun, are they having any difficulty seeing stars with the scanning telescope? Early in the mission, they said they were unable to see any stars through the scanning telescope, and it sounded as though this was because of scattered light.
No, I don't think we're having any particular problem. There was one star that with the given sun angle that we've got that we were thinking this morning when we were doing the P23 sightings that it might give him some difficulty in picking it out because of the sun angle, but I believe he was able to use the 33. Isn't that right?
Yeah, of course, it's a function of the magnitude of the individual star as well as the angle to the sun. But generally speaking, the farther away from the Earth they get, the more luck they're having with seeing stars in the daylight. So it would lead one to believe that the reflected Earth shine has quite a bit to do with it. If the sun is in the field of view of the telescope, then stars are not visible. But if the telescope field of view is in shadow, then some stars are and some are not, just depending on how bright they are, and we don't have all those numbers yet.
John?
Paul, if you gave this, I didn't get it, but what was the speed of the spacecraft at the time of TV?
At the time of TV, well, it was almost at MSI. It was just the picture ended 10 minutes before MSI, so you could back it off from there. Phil, do you have that?
Yes, the velocity in the Earth system was 3260. Okay, with the and it wasn't going exactly straight away, so the velocity relative to the Earth, the straightaway velocity was something less than that, slightly less than that.
3260 feet per second.
Right.
Tom?
At what point did the navigator switch over from Earth horizon sightings to lunar horizon sightings? And could somebody explain why he did that at that point?
I believe the ones we did this morning on this ship were the second. Was that the second set of lunar horizon star sightings? Mike, you want to take a crack at the second part?
Well, in general terms, you get more information from taking these sightings relative to the closer of the two bodies. So generally, when you're close to the Earth, you'd use the Earth horizon. When you're close to the Moon, you'd use the Moon horizon. That's not a pure true statement, because it's better yet to incorporate a mix of the two, to start out with the emphasis on the close body and then to phase in more and more sightings on the distant body, and as you get to the equidistant point, well, then they're equally important, and then you switch your emphasis to the closer body. So you see what I mean? We'd be shifting from Earth horizon to Moon horizon as we go to the Moon.
Do you remember at what point the Moon became the more important of the two bodies?
No, I don't. I don't think there's any magic number. It's sort of like what's a perfect martini? Exactly what ratio of vermouth to gin do you...
Was it the halfway point in the trip, or
no.
Was it a little past that?
No,
because it's not the halfway point.
It was within the last 10 hours or so that they shifted over, that the last two sets were using the lunar. Could I make a comment on that? The people on the ground that have been analyzing the data from these sightings have indicated that Jim Lovell is doing an excellent job in terms of marking and taking these observations, and that it's very repeatable, and the errors are very small. That he's doing a very good job at it.
Waller?
References to the horizon problem in the Earth horizon observations. The Earth has a double or triple horizon, particularly the closer you are to it, apparently, the more horizons you see. And I wondered if this was going to be a problem, and whether, in fact, it was better. As they got further away, it sort of, you had one nice sharp horizon, and when you were too close to it, there were too many horizons to deal with.
Well, I think in general that's true, that when you're in close, you get the layer of air glow and so forth. The horizon is somewhat difficult to define, and as you get further, I'm not a pilot, but from what I've seen, it seems to be less of that effect, at least in the photographs I've seen. I don't know, Mike might add something to that.
Well, yes, you're right. The closer in you are, the more difficult it is to define the horizon. And right after TLI, the first set of sightings we took were primarily devoted to defining exactly where the visible horizon was. And then a number was derived from those sightings, which was fed into the computer, which told the computer how big the Earth was, essentially. In other words, the radius of the Earth, which is stored in the computer's memory, was updated based on how it really looked. And these sightings are important for the trip home, whereas the spacecraft nears the entry corridor, the importance of the horizon's apparent location becomes stronger, and therefore we wanted to get a good number updated, and we've done so.
Al?
I'd like to make one more brief try on the reason for the spacecraft speeding up as it came under the influence of gravity. As I understood your reply, there were two factors, or are two factors, to be considered: the moon's gravity itself, and also the speed of the moon in its orbit around the Earth. Both these factors influence the increased speed of the spacecraft. Is that correct?
The gravity part was not something that I intended to imply if I did. The gravity of the Earth and the gravity of the moon are both acting on the spacecraft, and that is a very gradual thing, acting on the speed of the spacecraft. Okay, and it tends to be an acceleration and is a slow changing thing. The discontinuity in the speed of the spacecraft was the one I was trying to address. And it's like at the instant you switch, you got a rather major step in velocity, and I would like to try that one again. Suppose you were driving toward a railroad crossing, okay, and away from a filling station, and there were a train on the railroad crossing coming from your right, okay? What would your speed be relative to a viewer at the filling station and a person on the train? Okay? If you were driving straight away from the filling station, you would have a velocity. And he would say, measure this and say, you're going 60 miles an hour. This train on the right, you are going something less than 60 miles an hour unless he is directly in front of you and measuring your velocity. If he is a long ways off, your apparent velocity to him is zero because you're going directly across him. And as you approach, the velocities change. Now, what has happened is that we were going almost away from the Earth, okay, but not in the same line of sight to the moon. It's that kind of thing. So it's the same anomaly as the man in the filling station and the man on the train. If the line of sight is not the same relative to the direction you're going, they can't have the same apparent velocities.
Spacecraft at that instant, that it, at that point, did not actually increase.
It did not change. The velocity of the spacecraft relative to the sun is unchanged.
Ah, that's right.
Oh, I think it's just another scale. You go to another meter. Yes, sir.
To put it another way, just to clear it up in my mind, is it accurate to say that the velocity of the spacecraft in relation to the Earth has not changed either?
The velocity of the spacecraft relative to the Earth is unchanged. The velocity of the spacecraft relative to the Moon was unchanged. The point of reference changed. Okay, it was that way a second before we changed. It had the same velocity as a second after we changed. But when we changed the point of origin, then the apparent velocity changed.
Okay. Right here.
To follow this up, is it fair to say that the increase in the velocity that you reported when you changed the reference point was simply the sum total of your previous velocity plus the velocity of the moon's orbiting motion? Is that what accounted for the increase because they were moving away
If you were in the moon.
No, and we've pursued this too far.
It sounds like we're getting to the point where we should have said a lot more or a lot less.
Why was it stated then that at that point the craft then was under the influence of the moon's tug instead of the Earth's? That was a transcript. It's now, for the first time, under the influence of another celestial body.
Why did I do that?
I mean,
because
you indicated
the computer told me.
You indicated there was a certain point. Now, there is
a discrete point called the sphere of influence. Is there not?
The interface of the two magnetic fields.
There is a discrete point that we call the sphere of influence. Yeah, it's a mathematical term. Precisely, it is the point where the gravitational attraction of the Earth and the Moon are equal.
Over here, nice, easy question.
On the same subject. If that is the point where the two gravitational fields are of equal strength, then why isn't that the same point at which the minimum velocity of the spacecraft occurs? That's the first question.
It is.
Trajectory document?
We will now be speeding up. Now, they may have defined the equal potential point at a different place. Okay, but and we will find out. If the velocity begins to increase, we'll learn something. We don't expect it to.
You don't expect the velocity to increase?
I mean decrease, sorry. We expect it to start increasing toward the moon now.
I guess I've been using the wrong document, but this revision one to the operational trajectory, is this totally incorrect or just 50% incorrect? Because this indicates minimum velocity about 63 hours, 64 hours into the mission.
Is that where they switched reference systems?
No, using one reference system, just staying with the geocentric velocity, this indicates the minimum point.
I would suggest that you and I get together after this and go through the numbers in detail. I could not answer that at this time. I don't know what to think. There are many things to be considered there.
Let me just ask you one more question about mileage. How close is the mission now to the nominal figures for velocity and mileage? Do you have some kind of idea? 50th of a percent, something like that?
I think the closeness of the mission to the nominal is to be indicated by the extremely small mid-course that's required, the 3 feet per second.
And?
Would it be possible for you to give us some, at least roughly, approximate points for the Paracentian and Apacentian in terms of lunar coordinates?
I was going back through these numbers, and then I did not compute these numbers precisely, but it looks like that the Paracentian will be near the Paracentian of the approach trajectory, and that is at about 174 west. Which would put the Apacentian at about 6 degrees east. Now that could change a few degrees either way, but it looks like it's going to be very close to that right here.
How are the men feeling? Are there any further signs of illness or distress?
No, we had a check with them earlier in the shift, and they indicated that there has been no further signs of illness and that they are all feeling fine.
Yes.
LOI, I believe, is on the back side of the moon when you're in blackout conditions. How long are you going to have to sweat until you know that you're in business after the burn?
It's 15 to 20 minutes, something like that, isn't it, Phil?
It's something around 20 minutes.
There was a question right there.
In order to convert foot per second velocities within the MSI to mile per hour speeds for the lay reader, may we rely on the 0.6818 conversion factor in the back of the press kit still?
Yeah, feet per second, same conversion.
I don't convert them that way. I'll see what it is if you'd like with my pencil. But it sounds like a reasonable number. The fact that we've switched reference systems doesn't change the conversion from feet per second to miles an hour.
Vic, right here in front.
Is it definite that we use the telephoto on the TV tomorrow morning? Look at the little...
Will it be the telephoto or the wide angle lunar orbit?
We're not looking around inside the cabin, or are we going to be looking at the lunar surface?
I think it's the telephoto.
Therefore, at the lunar surface.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what additional filtration we need. Do you know, Mike?
They're talking about conversion factors.
Oh. I think the moon is less bright, so maybe they won't need it. Over here.
Do you have an exact time and distance from Earth on the switch in reference to the moon?
Time and distance?
At what time was a reference?
You have a time and distance.
55 hours, 38 minutes. I don't know what the seconds were.
The question again, please?
The MSI point.
The MSI occurred at 55 hours, 38 minutes, 46 seconds, 33,821 miles from the moon, and 176,276 miles from the Earth.
Okay, that's a good stopping point. Thank you.
That's like what is grandfather.